This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to the Hope Centre, where real stories meet real conversations about mental health, growth and hope. I'm Anna, and we're here to share, connect and remind you that you're not alone. Let's dive in. Kia ora and welcome to the Hope Centre podcast, a project put together by Life Matters Suicide Prevention Trust with the help of ORFM and Anytime Fitness in Dunedin. If you have any topics that you'd like us to cover or are interested in being a guest on the podcast, please reach out to us on our Facebook page or email admin@lifematters.org.nz. Kia ora, I'm Anna.
And this is Omri.
We're both senior peer support workers at Life Matters and we'll be your hosts for this conversation about hope, healing and lived experience.
Today, we have a very special guest and someone who I'm very excited to talk to and hear more from. Today we have Karen Cossens, a person of many hats and many talents. Karen is the host of the Southern Peer Hub. Welcome, Karen. I'm going to extend an invite for you to introduce yourself.
I've been sitting here deep breathing and I'm aware that as a human being, I'm someone who comes from Kurau, inland from Oamaru. Most importantly, I'm the mother of a 38-year-old and a 32-year-old. I'm a learner. I am a beginner at many things. And I have the joy of hosting the Southern Peer Hub, which is focused on supporting kaimahi or capsule workers who use their lived experience of mental health and addiction to lift up the lives of others. Yep, that's me.
Well, thank you so much, and can speak from my own personal experience having had one of those supervision experiences with you. That it's very uplifting and affirming of the work we are doing, and also helpful on where to keep going. Really appreciate your work.
Yeah, and I suppose today's episode is off the back of an awesome experience we had earlier this week with you, Karen. We travelled down to good old Balclutha for a Southern Lived Experience hui, and we got to meet so many cool people. Mm. And Omri got a really cool hat and a really cool t-shirt that he's been wearing since. He showed up with it yesterday. To sit and go on a nice bus trip. And we had a really good time, and I think we're riding the high the rest of the week. So thank you for that. We learned a lot. And we're excited to have you here on the podcast.
I just think it's all about connection, and if through someone listening to this podcast they know to reach out to Life Matters, then it's job done, isn't it?
Too right. Cool.
And that was very much the overarching theme that I got out of the hui as well, was through connection so much as possible. Mm. And it was something that one of the speakers, Deborah Lampshire, said is never underestimate your ability to be an agent of change.
Yeah.
And through connection, that is, the possibilities are endless.
Absolutely.
And so with our podcast, we do a quick fast five questions at the end, and one of them being, leave a question for the next guest. So you were lucky enough to have Cuba on the last podcast, and the question that she left, if you could only eat five vegetables for the rest of your life, what five veggies would you eat?
I actually wrote them down because as a child, I was allergic to vegetables, not physically, but mentally. And for me, I would have asparagus, kumara, capsicum, green beans, and my family will roll their eyes, carrots.
Ooh, why will they roll their eyes?
Because carrots were on every plate.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
I didn't even think of capsicum.
No. We got too invested in this just before coming here, and, Google was telling us some technicalities of what actually a vegetable is and what it isn't, and there were so many things I wanted to put on mine, but they're actually not a vegetable, like cucumber.
Mm. Where it will say something along the lines of, biologically it's the fruit, but culinarily uses a vegetable. Right?
Yeah, I avoided tomatoes, by the way, for that reason.
I did have tomatoes on mine, but I crossed it out after Omri, yes, and in fact informed me that it is a fruit. Do you want to share what you chose?
Yeah, I have mushrooms. So diverse, you can stuff them, you can soup them. Mm-hmm. Broccolini, a bit crunchier than the broccoli. And then very basic from there, potato, onion and garlic.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. I also had broccolini. I didn't want to distinguish between broccolini and broccoli because I felt like they're too similar, but either or. I had corn on mine, a bit of a rogue choice there, but wasn't everything that every dish that was cooked, there was always corn. I chose potato because in Omri's words, it's a dynamic vegetable. You can have it many ways. I put spinach on there. That's because I couldn't really think of anything else, but I do like it, I suppose. But I do like capsicum, and I didn't even think about it, so I'd probably chuck that on there too.
I have to own that I had broccolini for the first time 2 years ago. Mm. It was unknown to me.
Yeah.
And pan-fried, it's brilliant.
It's so good. See, that's how I have it. I think I've mentioned this multiple times on the podcast, which is awfully concerning, but pan-fry it with some lemon juice and some, like, garlic salt or something. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. It is so good. Cool. Well, now I'm a wee bit hungry. Should we get started?
let's dive in.
Cool. As per usual, we've came up with a wee list of questions that, you know, we were interested to ask Karen and get a wee bit of her lived experience and some insights into those questions. But, you know, as conversational podcasts go, we will talk about it and we can share our own perspectives, etc. So we'll see how it goes, hey? Mm. Cool. So the first thing we were interested in is what drew your eye to peer support in the first place?
Well, as some of the listeners will have guessed, I'm of an older generation given the age of my children. And for me, initially when I became unwell with my first child, it was something that was behind closed doors and you didn't talk to anyone and no one was to know. So it wasn't until a later hospitalisation up in the ward above EPS, actually, I don't even think it's running as a ward anymore. It was more like a holding pen. Oh. Anyway, it was there in the smoker's room that I discovered what a privilege it was, but also how healing it was to hear other people's stories.
Oh, wow.
So it's quite a pivotal moment for me. There was also one neighbour back in the day, Mrs. McDonald, named Jennifer. I would honestly leave the house absolutely terrified with what was going on in my head and arrive on her doorstep still in my pyjamas, and she'd just sit with me, hold space. She was an epitome of peer support back in the day.
Wow.
It's very much, I'm hearing that it's very much the, again, what we said before, that connection, that learning that you're not alone through hearing those stories and people, treating you as a human rather than looking at you from what is wrong.
Exactly. Mm. Well said, Omri.
Mm. And I find beauty in, you know, as you said, it was like a holding pen where I'm assuming a bunch of people who were struggling with maybe similar thoughts or similar feelings, and I could see how that would be so impactful and validating for your experience to be talking to other people who may feel similarly, and that's kind of the essence of the work that we do, right? You know, share stories. So
yeah, I thought I was the only one.
Yeah.
And that I was abnormal to the point that I didn't have a right to be because I was nuts. But what I learned was just a different way of being.
Yeah. Gosh, that's very powerful.
What about you, Anna? What got you into peer support?
Oh, it's a good question. I suppose I started or first learned what peer support was a couple of years ago when I was a uni student. And it's quite funny, actually, because I studied psychology, and I feel like when you study psychology, they talk to you about going into clinical psychology. Mm-hmm. They don't really talk to you about the other options. And I suppose peer support in Dunedin was only developing and was coming out of Life Matters, which was a charity, and it didn't seem like an option mm-hmm. for a career. But I was really interested in getting some experience and actually interacting with people. And peer support was a beautiful way to do that. And I think, you know, through those years at uni is when my mental health was kind of at its worst and I was really struggling. And I saw and learned what peer support was. And I thought, damn, like, I wish that I knew that that was a thing that was out there, because that sounds like a healing experience, is talking to people who may have been similar. And even, you know, having those people to kind of show me that it's possible to get through what I was feeling and what I was experiencing. So I volunteered at Life Matters and started as a volunteer, and it's grown from there. And I'm so glad that I found it. And I'm so excited that there is a whole lot of new opportunities opening up for us in this space. And it can be something that we can do as a career, because it's so rewarding. It's awesome. It is genuinely awesome.
Well said.
Yeah.
And there is a reciprocity in that. You're gaining hope yes. from your interactions mm-hmm. and in your giving of hope.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And like, you know, I may, you know, I refrain from saying lived experience, but living experience, because especially as a rangatahi, like I'm still going through experiences every day. And I mean, everybody goes through experiences every day that could be impacting their wellness for better or for worse. And I still learn so much, and I'm always constantly learning from the people that I'm supporting. Mm. Yeah. That. How about you, Omri?
Mine is a bit more selfish, where first really I've got a background in occupational therapy, so I have a clinical background, and it wasn't until looking for a job and stumbled across Life Matters and peer support. So it was very much what drew my eye was money and employment. But since being here, I've really enjoyed blending my lenses of clinical and peer support and the opportunity that can bring as well. And again, it's that something I've always prided myself on is my ability to build rapport with people. And that's what it is. It's getting to know a human being for a human and knowing them for what inherently makes them up, rather than stigma or boxes that we can put people in. And one of my guests said to me, I think it was yesterday, was, you know, I asked them about what they get out of the space and what they enjoy about peer support, and they said it's being heard and truly heard. They don't have a lot of that space in a lot of other interactions that they have.
Oh, nice.
Mm. It's all about time, I feel. It was, feedback that I got given around when I first started was, you've got time, coming from a much faster pace.
Yeah.
And it's nice to actually be able to slow down and, again, we're not just tick boxing like A, B, C on. It's A is A plus B equals C. But let's slow that down.
Yeah. I even like reflect back on my studies, and I don't think using lived experience was ever discussed. It was very much like, this is what a disorder is and this is what anxiety is, and, you know, and it was very much like that tick box exercise, right? So I didn't even cross my mind that it could be something that could be powerful.
Well, I think it's going to change the Royal College of Psychiatry, Australia and New Zealand. Now, I might have that slightly wrong, but the Aussie and the Kiwis, bosses of the psychiatrists, have put out a position paper around lived and living experience and clearly signpost it as something that needs to be happening in all practice. How huge is that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Even thinking back on, we talked to one of our ex-peer supporters a couple of weeks ago, Josiah, and he's a medical student, and it was interesting to hear about some of the blend, but also the lack of the blend of lived experience in clinical settings. You know, I think there's a lot of room for some exciting change going into the future, which is super cool.
And it's happening now as well. Today I had meetings with different mental health wards about how we can be more supportive and go to community meetings they might be having and what those relationships can look like, and knowing that change will be slow and progress will be slow, but the openness that I was greeted with today was so exciting and very heartwarming that we are wanted in these spaces, even if progress might look and feel slow. We're doing it the right way.
Cool. I mean, I think what initially drew you to peer support does sound like a bit of a turning point, but my next question was, what is your turning point in your recovery?
I think for me, what has allowed me to stand more firmly on my feet, even though I have difficult times, was being able to recognise what I call yellow and red alerts in terms of my behaviour or choices or way I respond. And to know that everyone has rough days or weeks or months, and it doesn't mean I'm going to end up back in hospital. I mean, hospital is certainly the very best place at times, but for me it's become quite a fearful experience. So yellow and red alerts.
Wow.
And it sounds like you're very aware of what those are, and your fears around hospital, I know you're not alone in as well, so it's very good to be aware of that. And it sounds like you have some communities of mutual support that are there for you too.
Exactly.
I think that's an exciting thing about peer support, is that we are looking at health and well-being more holistically. And I've noticed, like, particularly this year, being hugely engaged in peer support as doing it full time and not like as a volunteer or as a part time employee, is I've become so much more aware of what wellness looks like in myself and what to look out for. And I think it's interesting.
One of the things that I've been looking at university is this idea of being in recovery as opposed to being recovered. And where we each sit on those two points. I often introduce myself as a work in progress. I think that's okay.
Totally. It's very much of that. We're always putting in work, and as both of you said before, always learning. I think we often think about what is that goal, and always looking at the goal, but we're doing so many steps to reach that. That's the exciting part. It's it's not about the destination. It's all about that journey.
And I think also what's been a turning point for me is being comfortable in my own skin most of the time. Can't say all the time, but comfortable in my own skin. Being okay to be authentically me. Not trying too hard.
I think that's really important. Oh, gosh, I feel like we could have some good conversations after this, because this is something that I'm working on. It's time to book a supervision session.
Your first one, right?
Yeah, my first one.
That'd be so cool.
Yeah. I'm curious, Karen, how did you reclaim your mental health journey and view it as part of your strengths?
Well, I do view it as part of my strengths. I wouldn't be the person I am if I hadn't experienced psychosis, if I hadn't experienced depression. Anxiety still sits on my shoulder as a superpower, but the reclaiming came when I realised I was more than the labels the psychiatrist had given me.
It can feel easy to be in a box once you've been given one of those labels.
And don't get me wrong, I remember distinctly being 23, and I don't have a huge amount of memory, but I have a snapshot of this, of sitting on a stage in front of medical students, being asked questions, and the person that was asking the questions, who I assume was a psychiatrist, said, that is depression. And I went, you what? It was, I loved that label. It meant I wasn't an awful, awful mother. It meant I wasn't not maternal. It meant I was unwell. So, yes, a label has its place. But for me, letting go of the stigma I felt, you know, that had been part of my journey. And in terms of my strengths, I think it's recognising we all need to pace ourselves. Yeah. And what my rate of movement through life is entirely different from yours, Anna. And it's not an age thing.
Yeah.
It just is a capacity thing. I'm not sure if that resonates, Omri.
Big time, and it's something a lot of my lived experience is around capacity. I had a brain injury, and so my capacity changed within myself, and it's recognizing that my new capacity isn't a hindrance. I can't throw myself into, and I shouldn't throw myself into work as a distraction or as my fulfillment. There is so much more in life that I can get fulfilled from and sustained from. And this has been a great, there's been a learning curve that I've had to have, and have a learning that I have appreciated is slowing down is so helpful. You know, as cheesy as it is, but to smell the roses is seeing what's out there. It's actually something I recommended to another of our peer supporters who is overseas at a summer camp at the moment. And having also worked at a summer camp, recommended to them once a day, just look around, do a 1 minute 360 and just look at everything around you, because you are in a crazy environment, which is fast paced. But this is doing that when in my summers really helped me appreciate where I was amongst all the chaos that was happening.
Yeah, and I think it, I mean, what you're saying really rings true to me, because I think I support, I've got quite a demographic of people I support at the Hope Centre, which is young people. And by young people, I mean people who are younger than me, 18, 19, 20-ish, who have a lot of, you know, look at themselves and kind of beat themselves up for not being at the same pace as everyone else, or how come my friends aren't struggling with their mental health, or how come they're in careers and I can't even get up out of bed in the morning. And I think, you know, a big part of me supporting them is reminding them that, hey, look at this battle that you've been facing for all of this time and all of this lived, this stuff that you've been going through as a young person, like, your journey is different from someone else's journey, and therefore success and what, you know, your capacities look different to these people that you're comparing yourselves to. And I think that's been important for me, is to, you know, I've got all of this stuff going on behind the scenes and you don't know what other people are going through, of course, but like, that's why I can't compare myself to them, is because it's not the same as mine. So, yeah.
I just so believe in celebrating the victories. Yeah. And, and for me, this is obviously just in the last perhaps 10 years. I've had a rule of five. So get up, get dressed, cook something, eat something, light the fire. Obviously that's flexible in summer. If I do one of those, it's a damned good day.
Yeah,
some mornings before I get up to work, if I'll look at my bed and I'm like, oh, my bed hasn't been made. And some mornings I'm like, no, I definitely have to do this, because if I don't achieve anything else today, at least I've straightened up my covers a wee bit.
There's a gentleman who's written a whole book based on the idea of making your bed in the morning.
Cool.
I'll just send that thought to you. I'll send the book as well.
Oh, very good. Cool. Well, we've got a couple more questions that we'd love to ask you, Karen, and to keep on discussing between us. But before we do so, we might quickly jump to hear from our sponsor.
Excellent.
At Anytime Fitness Dunedin, our mission is to raise the self-esteem of the world. A healthy lifestyle doesn't start and stop at the gym. It starts with a plan, which is why we offer solutions that incorporate fitness, nutrition, well-being, and recovery. With three local clubs to choose from, with 24/7 access, we're certain you'll find your fit. Contact us today to get started. Call 03 455 0013 or visit anytimefitness.co.nz.
And welcome to the Hope Centre podcast. Thank you so much, Anytime Fitness, for sponsoring this podcast. We really appreciate the mahi that you do in the community, as well as supporting us. We are still here with the fantastic Anna and Karen. Personally, I'm looking forward to learning more.
Yeah. Okay, cool. We will dive back in with a very important question, a question I'm interested in, because I know that as lived experience workers, you know, opportunities are on the rise. Where can you see the lived experience model growing or adapting in Aotearoa?
Well, I think the first thing I want to say is that I am an IPS trainer, that's intentional peer support, and I'm looking forward to being part of the crafting of that to better suit Aotearoa. But look, there's a huge amount of growth happening at the moment, right through the motu, right through the islands. And I think the next step is growing that partnership with clinical. And it's not that people are choosing to ignore peer support. It's just they don't have the knowledge. And I think Omri's mentioned that you've been up on the wards. It is about relationships and building those relationships with clinical. And when peers and ED comes, that will be the first step, I think, for Otipoti.
I'm wondering what would, ideally, would that look like to you? Like, what do you think is possible for our relationships with clinical services?
Well, I'm hearing of it in some North Island organisations where peer support workers are co-located. It's also happening in Southland.
Cool.
And what that is both groups getting over themselves. So both groups not carrying stigma, both groups being prepared to form a relationship in which there's mutuality.
Cool.
Yeah. It sounds rude, doesn't it? Getting over themselves.
No, but I mean you're right. Like, I think we've felt a lot of feelings towards clinical services. I think that's only natural, but we're going to have to get over those feelings and vice versa, you know, because I think together we could create a lot of positive change, and it's just about getting there and how we do that.
Yeah, I think it's all recognising that no one is perfect. We had lived experience of engaging in clinical services, which influences our feelings. As well as working as peer supporters. And I'm sure vice versa, they have had similar experiences. And so, it's recognising that we're all here because we care, and what can we do to work together.
I think that's the key, recognising that we're all there to support the whaiora or the person seeking wellbeing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Omri, do you want to?
Yeah, of course. Something I do feel like is a big strength of yours as well, Karen, is modelling being peer in relationships. Something I noticed very quickly is you have a natural skill of inviting people in and inviting people to talk rather than forcing people to share. And I'm wondering, how do you really ingrain that and be that model in your peer relationships?
Oh, I'm getting leaky eyes. Goodness gracious me. For me, there's a gentleman called Grant Cooper who works for Otago Mental Health Support Trust and is also a facilitator in MH101. And he was my model. I remember meeting him and thinking, I need to write his words down. He said that in a peer way. I do believe it's the impact of my training, but I think also, I'm trying to find the right words, sorry. I think also it's about holding positive regard for others.
Mm.
And it's a statement that's part of almost a model of care. But if we go looking for the strengths of someone else and view them through a positive lens, find that strength, then the relationship grows.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Again, it's the unconditional positive regard that people have value.
Yes.
And if we can see that value, then we have made someone feel valued.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's reciprocated then. I can still have a good vent, though. Venti, yeah. That would be good. Because probably one of my big learnings was if I wanted to actually be peer in my relationships, I had to be peer with myself and watch how I spoke to myself.
Mm. Wow, I've never thought of that.
No,
what does that look like?
So let's use the hui as an example.
Yeah.
So just taking you back, listeners, we went to Balclutha, whole 53 of us almost. And after the event, I drove back poorly from Balclutha doing the you should have, you could have, you ought to have, did you really? Conversation, and I had to actually pull over, go for a walk, and remind myself that no one was hurt in the making of the event. That's quite a big statement, I know, but
I know, but you're so right, because I think we can be our toughest critic, right? And sometimes I'll leave a peer space and I'm like, I could have, should have, and would have, but I think it's part of making relationships is having space for mistakes maybe to be made or to explain feelings and,
And, you know, that wonderful gift that we've been given in intentional peer support of naming the disconnect.
Yeah.
It's so freeing.
Mm.
And I find that in all my relationships, you know, even with the lady at Foursquare in Korea.
And that disconnect isn't forever.
No.
You know, disconnect opens the space to reconnect.
Exactly.
And that can, in some cases, reconnect even stronger than it was before too.
That's generally the experience I've had. If I name it and then ask how we can move forward, it's authentic, isn't it?
Yeah. I think sometimes it can be hard, but I've noticed that when I feel safe in a relationship, it does feel a lot easier to do so, right? I'm wondering how you model being peer in your relationships, Omri.
Yeah, this is actually a question I wrote down because I was genuinely curious because it's something that I feel sometimes I think I often have to think about being peer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because it's a bit different from my previous training that I've had.
Yep.
And so a lot of what I do think of is that talk of how would I talk to myself this way and that negative self-talk that we can have of I'm an idiot for not doing that. But no, that's a different way I could have taken that. And something I really appreciated from Cuba, our last week's guest, asked me today, what do you think you did well in that session? And so it's very much of, again, giving myself that conditional that positive regard of, you know, if I can think of what I did do well, I can also think of what I could have done differently. But that's a possibility for next time. That's not I've made a mistake.
Look, 30 years ago with red lipstick, I wrote on my old-fashioned mirror in the bedroom, I do the best I can given the time, place, and situation. And it's something I try to carry with me, Omri, isn't it? But we sometimes need to reframe to look at something from the positive lens, because we're so often in other roles looking for ways to improve or identifying mistakes. So the reframe's important. What about you, Anna?
I like what you know, that quote that you just expressed, because it holds true to something. Again, Cuba's full of wisdom, but, you know, I've had it was a personal situation, but, you know, with the Hope Center and with the crisis work we do, there's always the possibility of, you know, things not going right in the sense of losing somebody. And following a personal experience of this, Cuba said to me, you know, you did the best you could with the resources that you had. Yes. And that's often something I'm reflecting on is, you know, if I'm coming out of sessions and I've done the best I could with the resources I had at the time, and that may be knowledge, but also how I'm feeling within myself, how my own lived experience is sitting on that day, then I've done the best that I can. I think all of, you know, the training that we've done also has been great. And I think what I value about the Hope Center is we often are reflecting after sessions with senior peer supporters, but also with the team leaders. And to me, I don't know if Amy listens to the podcast, but I get so much of my wisdom and my knowledge from Amy, and she will always say things that I'm always putting away in the back of my head to remind myself, but things I can take into my peer relationships. But yeah, I think that positive, you know, thinking about the positives and reflecting on the positives as opposed to the things that may have gone wrong has been really important to me in being peer.
Anna, if I could just share something that you may want to take out of the podcast. I think resources availability is really, really valid. But I have been in hospital when someone has made an attempt, and that's with all care and so we can't wrap people up in cotton wool. Even that doesn't help.
Yeah, definitely. And I think even...
It sucks, by the way.
Yeah, it does for sure. And I mean, even in my most, I don't know the right word to use it, like with my guests who may frequently be in crisis, I am constantly reminding myself and reminding them, like, I can't make the decisions for you. You've got to want to live for yourself, or you've got want to get better. And it's an ongoing challenge. Yeah.
I think it is an ongoing challenge, but really important that you remember that you did do the best you could.
Yeah.
Time, place, situation, and resources. I'm going to add that to it, Omri. Remind me. Thank you.
Cool. We've got a couple more questions that we would love to check in with you, Karen. Before we do so, we may just pop to our last ad break from our sponsor.
Anytime Fitness Dunedin is here to raise the self-esteem of the world. Whether you're new to fitness or getting back into a routine, now's the time to put yourself first. With a supportive community, three local clubs, flexible membership options and access anytime, we're here to help you reach your goals. Get in touch with our friendly team today. Call 03455 0013 or visit anytimefitness.co.nz.
Thank you once again, Anytime Fitness Dunedin, for your sponsorship and for the hard mahi that you do. We are unfortunately coming nearer to the end of our time today with Karen. But before we do, we still have a few more nuggets of gold I'm sure we can extract from your brain, if you're okay with it.
Certainly.
I'm wondering, what does using your lived experience mean to you?
So for me, it's about holding space for myself and others, just at the very simplest level. And it's about validating or normalizing big feelings. And that normalizing doesn't mean making little of it, but saying me too, just like that big movement, that me too. It's validating, and it takes away the shame.
Something I'm sure a lot of our listeners are wondering, and I wondered when I first was getting into peer support, is how do you make that me too, you know, me too, and putting your arms out as a gesture of this is for both of us and not a, oh, that's me as well. It's my time.
Write it down.
Yeah.
I don't know that I know the answer to that, to be honest, Omri. I think, again, it comes back to just being truly yourself.
Yeah.
So it doesn't come across as patronising.
Mm.
I'm an ex-school teacher, so I can get a bit of a tone. yeah.
Mm.
No, it's not about me telling my backstory or the time I felt like that. It's actually just holding space and acknowledging that that must have felt, or I know it felt really for me.
Mm. Mm.
And then that comes in with that normalising as well. It's as you said, it's not belittling, but it's normalising that those feelings are so normal and valid. And as you said about your experience of recognising that other people are going through the same thing or have those same feelings from those situations.
Yeah, it's just like the smoker's room on ward.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting a lot more people coming through at the doors. It feels like at a rapid rate at the moment.
Yeah.
From EPS who don't really know what peer support is or the service that we offer. And, you know, sometimes people can come in and have had bad clinical experiences with their haunches up and, you know, they don't know what they're getting into with peer support. But once you actually get into that space and you do sit down with them and, like, you know, I've also experienced that, or, you know, me too, this is part of my lived experience. You can sometimes feel the stress coming off their shoulders a wee bit. Mm. It's like, oh, someone else actually understands.
It's allowing someone to have a rant because it's justifiable anger.
Yeah.
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 It's how they've perceived the situation.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to hear yes, but.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes, but.
Mm-hmm.
They actually just want to express it and have a human being go, wow, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess there's ways you can challenge maybe some things around situations or worldview, but it's the way you do it, right? Mm-hmm. It's not.
And it's not in those first 10 minutes while the rant's on.
Yeah, yeah. You need a bit of a relationship to form.
Yeah.
Cool.
Hmm. I'm wondering as well, this is something we touched on a couple weeks ago on the podcast, and because we're in the thick of winter, for you, do you need to do anything else for you mentioned your top five rules. Is there anything that changes in winter that you need to do for yourself and for your mental health?
I am outside for the sunrise and the sunset.
Oh, wow. What time is the sunrise?
Very variable in Kurau. It's around 7 at the moment.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So quite pleasant.
Yeah.
But I do that particularly in winter just for my circadian rhythm. Mm. And I won't go into that, but that just helps with sleeping patterns.
Yeah.
And the sunset, although it helps with the circadian rhythm, just is about me letting go of the day.
Mm.
I go for a walk at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I do for winter is that I get right into comfortable and soothing clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be, if I've done a Zoom with you, Omri, that I was wearing my pyjama pants.
Yeah.
Just that's the truth.
I think if we could come into the Hope Centre in our pyjama pants, we would. I know. I notice getting up and getting ready in the morning because I've got like a one side of my wardrobe that's quite nice, and I think sometimes I can come to work looking quite put together, and then sometimes I just chuck on a hoodie, chuck on some leggings, and off I go. And I can definitely tell in winter that like my fashion sense is like
go for warmth, a good fit. And comfort.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, have you been reflecting on winter? And it's been a couple of weeks. We did an episode on winter blues, and we kind of covered a lot of these questions.
Was with Noosa.
It was with Noosa. Oh, we have a fan.
Yes.
Is there anything that you would like to add about what you need during winter?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is recognising that things change, and as you're both talking about clothing and the importance that has. Again, I know for myself, some days I go, I just can't wear jeans, or I need shoes that give my feet a bit more breathing room.
Yeah.
And recognising that plays a big part on how your day can go.
Exactly.
And that's okay. And it's just about listening to yourself and what you need.
Yeah. Yesterday when I came to work, I wore my outside Birkenstocks that I chuck on if I'm like going to the bin and stuff. They're awful looking, but they're fluffy on the toes. Oh. And it was very frosty yesterday and I needed fluffy toes, you know, and I didn't look the most fashionable, but I did it anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, you've just got to find your thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Cool. Well, that's all of the questions that we had.
It's awesome. All about our main body
questions. We just want to say thank you, Karen, for coming and joining us on the podcast. It's been nice to connect with you over the week, but also to have you here and have some one-on-one time to get to know you a wee bit better. Before we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts or messages that you'd like to share with those who might be struggling?
It sounds a little bit corny being part of the Hope Centre podcast, but that there is hope.
Mm.
Sometimes it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes a lot of effort, but there is hope.
Mm. Thank you.
Yeah, it's something I feel like every interaction I have with you, be it email, Zoom, or in person, I do feel like I walk away with something to think about. And today I'm really walking away thinking about how do I be a better peer with myself. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much for that.
Cool.
Mm. Cool. Before we wrap on up on the podcast, we will run you through our final five questions. These are quick fire questions, short answers, and then we will ask you to leave a question for the next guest at the very end.
Perfect.
Cool.
What does well-being mean to you?
It means finding contentment.
Ooh, that's good.
Being content in a relationship is where I ended up with my husband.
Mm.
We were content.
Mm.
Yeah.
Aww.
Is there, yeah, speaking of that contentness, is there anything you do that brings you a sense of calm, balance, peace, or contentment?
So I use a cleansing breath a lot.
Ooh,
it's
nice.
A deliberate, you know, people talk about deep breathing and they get into this.
Yeah.
But a cleansing breath, just a good deep breath. And the other thing that's really important to me is a hug. Mm-hmm. And I have been known to seek people on the main street of Gurau for one.
Oh.
I could only imagine if you try to do the same thing in Auckland.
What does your cleansing breath look like? Is it like in yoga where you in through your nose, out through the mouth?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Cool. If you could make one rule that everyone had to follow, what would it be?
Be kind to yourself and others.
Mm. Yeah. I think we've had that a couple of times, so I think it's important.
It's a good rule.
Yeah. What would you tell your younger self today?
Don't sweat the small stuff, and it's all small stuff.
Oh, well, I'm going to invite you to leave a guest for a question for the next guest. Do you have something in mind?
I would like them and you to share a creative practice.
Ooh, I like that.
Oh, that's a good one. Do you have?
I could add that you do.
Yeah.
But yeah, just share a creative practice.
Yeah. Do you have an answer?
I do. I'm a writer.
Oh.
So yep. I journal.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you like to write?
Poetry.
Poetry. Mm. I've got a couple of guests that love to write poetry. It's just a good way to get thoughts out onto paper. Do you have an immediate answer?
No. This is going to, again, you make my brain work, Karen.
Research tells us having a creative practice is essential to our well-being.
Having the outlet, having the,
I'm one of those people that will jump from hobbies to hobbies to hobbies.
Good, yeah.
Usually in the creative realm, like I love to crochet, I like to colour. I've done like air dry clay and pottery, like I just jump from things. But at the moment I'm doing a lot of colouring in, adult colouring in, with nice alcohol markers that blend.
I think a lot of people get hung up on the fact that they have to do it for 3 hours.
Yeah.
For me, my creative practice, I allow 15 minutes a day.
Yeah, I think it's important, no matter how big or how small, to just do something that brings me joy every day. And, you know, sometimes it is reading a book for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, if that's all I'm allowed time-wise, but brain power-wise after a stressful day, but just a little bit of time. And I always feel better after I do it. So
awesome.
It's important.
So I know the mindset I have to have is, and you mentioned it in your introduction, Karen, but I don't need to be the best or the professional or even competent at it. If I'm having fun, that's the important thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right, because Cuba is a great artist and she likes watercoloring. And I made some watercolor cards for Mother's Day. And I was like, I'm so bad at this, but I'm having fun and that's what matters.
There we go. That's the answer.
Yeah.
You're not doing it for an exhibition.
No,
You're doing it for your well-being.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Well, thank you again for coming on in. I feel like I've learned so much today and I'm often leave this space either, you know, it's 5 o'clock, either feeling tired and ready for bed or energized and inspired. And I'm going back to the Hope Center feeling energized and inspired today. So thank you again for coming on and sharing your wisdom. Thank you, Omri, for helping host the podcast yet again.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you to ORFM Life Matters and to Anytime Fitness for sponsoring the podcast. If you've got any ideas that you'd like us to talk about, please reach out to admin@lifematters.org.nz. We'll see yous later.
Thanks for listening to our Hope Center podcast. The most important message we can leave you with today is that it's okay to ask for help and support. You can contact us at Life Matters on 027 240 0114 by phone or text, or send us a message on our Facebook page. You can also contact us through our website. Just look up lifematters.org.nz. You can also drop in to see us at 63 Hanover Street. We're open every day except Mondays. From Wednesday to Sunday, we're open until 9 p.m. If you need support out of those hours, free call or text 1737. If you'd like to listen again or hear other episodes in this podcast, go to oar.org.nz or wherever you get your podcasts. See you soon.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.